Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Ann Ortley's Weekly Weather Show. I'm Ann Ortley, and I'm an astrologer based in New York, and I'm sitting here at my bright red desk on the Upper East Side of Manhattan on the first Sunday of 2010. How cool is that? And what we do here every week is we talk about what the astrological portends are, what's going on in the heavens, and then how they're going to reflect here on Earth. And because it's a new year, and because Mercury's retrograde, and because Mars is retrograde, I thought I would announce some changes, minor changes to the show, but changes nonetheless. We're still going to do the weekly weather, but I thought it might also be good to kind of include a little astrology lesson as part of the class or as part of the show. So every week we'll talk about a topic that is astrological, so you can learn some stuff as well as figure out where the weather is. I thought that might make a good thing. And then we'll still take callers, of course, and emails if you have an email or a question you want to have covered. So that's the new format, not huge change, but we're inserting a lesson. Kind of works with my Midheaven in Sag, and I thought, you know, I get going on these topics, and I thought it might make sense to just kind of say, okay, this is the lesson part of it, and then we'll go forward to the callers and then any questions people might have. Okay, so we'll start off with the weekly weather, then we'll take a caller, then we'll do the lesson, and that'll probably be the format initially, and then we may swap it around or do the lesson and then do the caller. So the lesson today is going to be on eclipses, what eclipses are, how they work, what they feel like energetically, how to work with them, because we are in the middle of an eclipse period. We're right in the middle between two. We had a full moon eclipse on the 31st on December, on New Year's Eve, and we're going to have a new moon eclipse on the 15th of January. So we find ourselves right now for the weekly weather for January 4th between two eclipses. And basically, the time period between the eclipses can be very volatile, but this week we actually don't have a whole lot going on. So part of when I was prepping for the show, I thought, we don't have a lot going on. Well, maybe I could put a lesson in. And I thought, you know, I've been thinking I wanted to modify the show. So forward with the Mercury retrograde. So we don't have a lot of activity in the heavens this week. It's pretty quiet, which is actually nice because last week was kind of rocking and rolling, as was the week before. Christmas in the week of between New Year's and between Christmas and New Year's was kind of busy. So this week we actually have a quiet week. Yay. I know I'm ready. just to get a good night's sleep will be really nice. So we do have a lot of Mercury action this week. Okay, Mercury's a really busy guy. He's talking basically to everybody in the heavens except for Saturn and Pluto. But of course he is in Capricorn right now, so Saturn's really kind of listening to everything he says, and Pluto in Capricorn is also kind of hearing it. So Mercury's busy talking, communicating. Venus is a little busy, and the rest of the planets are pretty quiet. So we have a lot of energy that's not volatile, kind of peaceful, kind of moving slowly, not going too fast. And then next week, we're going to have a rock and roll week because we have a lot of activity once we get to the eclipse on the 15th, which is next Friday. So it's a week out. But this week, you should find it's the quiet before the storm. It's the eye of the hurricane. It's kind of a peaceful, get yourself together, figure out what you're doing kind of energy. So that's kind of a pleasant process. So we'll start with the moons. Now, one of the things that somebody wrote and asked was when I talk about the moons, you know, I kind of say the closing aspect. So this is, again, this is a little bit of an astrology lesson, but it's what you do whenever you're looking at anything begun under a moon. So like right now, we're in the period between the void moon. There's a void moon that we're in right now that is went void around 5 o'clock tonight. And it goes direct tonight around 9:52 Eastern Standard Time. And, of course, wherever time zone you're in, that's going to adjust. But I'm from Eastern Time, I'm broadcasting. So right now we're all in a void moon, wherever you are, if you're listening to the show live. And when it goes into Virgo at 9:52, everything that happens between 9:52 on the Sunday night and when the moon goes into Libra at 11:58 on Tuesday night is ruled by the moon in Virgo, meaning The moon's in Virgo, and Virgo's in charge of the things. The moon is the functioning of the world. So we always look to see what the moon is doing to see how things are functioning. So with Virgo moon, we know we're all going to feel a little sensitive, a little needing to get things done, big to-do list, kind of have all this stuff we want to cross off. Virgo moon's a busy, busy moon. Also can be a little sensitive to criticism. And we want to look at what the last aspect the moon makes before it goes void. So the last aspect the Virgo moon makes before it goes void is at 12:24 p.m., and that is an opposition to Uranus, moon opposed Uranus, which means that this evening, Monday, and most of Tuesday are pretty good for separating from things. So if you're going to start a health care plan or a health plan and you want to separate from your fat, this is a good moon to do it on. This is a good moon to say, you know, I've been thinking about it. You know, I like y'all a lot, but I think we need to part. Moon opposite Uranus, moon separating from Uranus. In Pisces, saying pleasantness. It also pleasant separation, but separation nonetheless. It also is a good idea to reorganize things. Moon opposite Uranus, separating from the structures that you have. So I went shopping this weekend and bought some stuff with my little Christmas cards. You know, you get those gift cards. So I know I'm sending some things that I replaced. You know, I bought new stuff that replaces old stuff. I'm sending that stuff off to Goodwill, and that will be part of my project for Monday morning. Hopefully to leave the apartment. But the idea is moon opposite Uranus separating. So this is a good week for separating things, this Monday, Tuesday. Then we go into the Libra moon at 11:58 p.m., which is right before midnight on Tuesday night. We have a long void moon on Tuesday afternoon, and we'll talk about void moons too, from 12:32 noon to midnight. Then on Wednesday, the moon's in Libra. On Thursday, the moon's in Libra. And then at 1:07 in the morning, on Friday morning, bright and early, Friday morning, the moon trines Jupiter. So what that is Wednesday, Thursday, great days for getting cooperation, organizing things, eliciting things. Moon in Libra wants to partner, wants to make relationships, wants to bond, wants to buddy with you. Closing trine is a trine to Jupiter. So all things begun on the 6th and the 7th will have a positive ending with a trine to Jupiter. So I'm actually getting my hair colored and cut, moon in Libra. You want to look beautiful. And, you know, so you can also schedule stuff on the 6th and the 7th to get your things accomplished. And then we get to Friday morning, and the moon goes into Scorpio at 5 in the morning. And it's in the Scorpio on the 9th and the 10th, and at 10 o'clock in the morning on Sunday morning, it goes void with a square to Jupiter. So that says that you can overdo things on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Squares are good. Moon in Scorpio, squaring Jupiter in Aquarius. Things begun on Friday, Saturday, or Sunday morning bright and early can have an overdoing quality to them. We don't dislike squares to Jupiter, but we do recognize that sometimes it can be a little overdone. And because the moon's in Scorpio, it can be very intense. So it can be an intense overdoing. So that's for the things that are happen on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And then on Sunday afternoon, the 10th, at 1:10, moon goes into Sagittarius. And the closing aspect for that is on the following Tuesday. And that is a sextile to Jupiter, which is, again, a positive aspect. So we like sextiles, moon sextile Jupiter, cooperative, everybody's happy, sextiles fun, party, Sagittarius fun, party. So we kind of watch this energy, and we know that the first couple days of the week, Monday and Tuesday morning, are good for separating. Actually, all day Tuesday, because the void moon counts, even though the moon's void. Then Wednesday, Thursday, really productive, great days for eliciting cooperation, organizing things. Friday, Saturday, really early Sunday morning, good days for overdoing, passion, excitement, great day for a first date. You can be a little over-the-top obsessed, but that's okay. And then the Sag moon on Sunday at 1 o'clock with a lovely closing aspect at 9:43 on Tuesday evening, which is a nice volatile, kind of happy energy, expansive abundance. You know, Moon Sagittarius is expansive, Jupiter in Aquarius is expansive. So it makes for a pleasant week. So we can anticipate this is going to be a fairly pleasant emotional week, aside from whatever happens on Monday and Tuesday morning where we want to separate from something. So that's how we work with these things. Now, if you cast a chart or you begin some new project on these days, watch and see how it turns out, because it should turn out separating Monday, Tuesday, positive Wednesday, Thursday, overdoing but still positive Friday, Saturday, and positive Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. So that's kind of, we're going to start working a little bit more. So you're planning your week and kind of getting, this is good, this is good. So it's a very positive kind of week. The other thing that happens this week is the aspects are not hard. Mercury has a couple of conversations with the planets in the sky. He's really arguing a little bit with the gang of three, and he's in a semi-square to them. So Mercury in Capricorn says to the gang of three, why are you people just so difficult? Why are you always giving me a hard time? Because Mercury in Capricorn is practical, and he's going backwards, and he's 45 degrees away from the gang of three. So he's in a mood to be in a little bit cranky, and he's saying to them, I don't understand why everything always has to be so difficult. So this is one of those weeks where we're going to be not in the mood to be difficult. We're going to be in the mood to be, can't we all just get along? Can't we all be positive? Can't the world be a nicer place? And that's kind of a nice thing. Mercury is retrograde, so we do recognize that one of the things that we're wanting to do is be positive, even though we really maybe want to change a situation. But the retrograde's kind of saying to us, well, let's see how it goes, see how you feel about it. If you like it, great. If you don't, you can change it up once Mercury goes direct, which is the 15th. So we have a lot of opportunity here to kind of tweak things. So your job is to say, well, I'm happy, but, you know, not 100% thrilled. What would I like to change? And really kind of focus on the vision. The gang of three, Jupiter, Neptune, and Chiron, have been traveling together all last year in Aquarius. And they met really in May and July, and then Jupiter and Neptune met in December, and they said, okay, let's start a new 13-year cycle in your Aquarius house, saying let's begin a new cycle. And if you think back 12, 13 years ago, you started a similar cycle then, and you're now moving forward in the whatever house is in Aquarius in your chart. But it also is a new beginning. And then this month, Neptune joins with Chiron, and he says, please understand that the wounds that you have were actually part of what your soul's contract was. And a lot of times when we do astrology, one of the things that people find is, you know, that there's this sense of, gee, you know, I have this ongoing problem, and does this mean I'll never have it fixed? It'll never go away? And an astrologer's job is to say, well, you know, it is your natal potential. It's what you signed up for. It's what your chart says you wanted to learn about this time. Now, I was raised a Catholic, so I've got a faith. You know, I was raised with one. And, you know, and as I got older, Catholic, you know, the rules kind of were a little cumbersome. But the basic premise of do I believe there's a divine order, yeah. And once I started studying astrology, even more so, that whether you call it a god or you call it DNA or you call it life cycles or you call it astrology or whatever you name it, there's a process and a pattern that we all go through that's part of the human condition where we're born, we grow and evolve, and then we die. And we're born into some process, and we get to learn how to work with that. Since I've been studying astrology, one of the things that I've gotten clearer on in my own case is, oh, well, that's my issue. I understand where it comes from. I know the stories from my childhood that created it. I know the environment that I was raised in, kind of the cosmic soup that I was cooked in with my family of origin. And I understand, you know, I understand how to work with that. I've been in therapy. I've, you know, read a lot of self-help books. I'm a Virgo. I strive for perfection, at least improvement every day. I don't always succeed, but, you know, it's in the back of my mind. So I kind of look and I go, well, shit, you know, why, excuse my French, why do we have these things we can never fix? Why do we have these wounds, these problems that can never go away? And the reason we have them, at least as my frame is now modified with Catholicism, a lot of studies in theology and philosophy, and now as an astrologer, and as a as a cognitive person kind of paying attention to the world, one of the things I've noticed is, well, that's never going away. But the button can be padded a little. It's always going to come up. It's not going to be gone. But I can learn to work with it in different ways. I can learn to respond to it in different ways. I can recognize that that's one of the things that makes my chart hop up and down. And I don't have to hop up and down in quite the same way. I can choose different options. But am I always going to be sensitized to hopping up and down? Probably. Am I always going to notice that thing? Probably. And so Chiron is that part of your chart. So this week, Neptune is going to come to Chiron. And he's going to say to him, this week, next week, he says to him, Chiron, the wound that you have, the problem that you see, the area that you live in, that you understand to be difficult, it actually is your soul's wound. It's what you wanted to learn about this time through. So we can't take it away, but we can make you conscious of it in different manners. And so there's a lot of that going on this week too. Because next week as Neptune gets to Chiron, we're going to be looking and going, you know, that really is like part of me. You know, I don't really want to throw it away. And if you think about Chiron's mythology, you know, he was the product of a rape. His mother didn't want him. His father was gone because it was Zeus, and his mother turned into a horse, and Zeus attacked her and raped her, and she gave birth to Chiron, who's half horse, half man, and she said, I'm out of here, threw him into foster care. He was raised by Apollo because he was half immortal because of Zeus as the parent, and he was kind of like, abandoned, you know, kind of left alone. You know, what's he going to, you know, he's a centaur, so he's not a god. So he kind of had to figure out who he was and what he was here for. And part of his whole journey was to learn to work with what he had been given, what his initial stuff was, and then to figure out, based on what he'd been given, what he was going to do with it. So that's the mythology of Chiron. And he did a lot of stuff. You know, he learned to be an herbalist. He learned to play the music. He learned divination. He kind of went on this very merry long journey during the course of his immortality to get more and more wise. But always, always the wound was there. Always the abandonment, always the loss, always the soul wound. That was kind of from the point of he wasn't wanted. We all have a Chiron someplace in our chart. There is in each of us a soul wound. And what this week is for you to kind of go, yeah, that's my soul wound. I recognize that one. And you know what? You know, I'm kind of used to it, actually. And now that I'm kind of used to it, I'm going to figure out how to work with it for the next big chunk of years. And this is a big one coming up, this conjunction. Conjunctions of Neptune and Chiron run for a long time. Jupiter and Neptune runs for 12 years, so that's about following your dream. Chiron and Neptune says, oh, okay. And one of the parts with Neptune joining to anything, whenever Neptune joins to a planet, we find the god. We find our god or goddess, depending, maybe you believe in goddesses. Or, you know, you believe in Earth. But Neptune is what we find divine, where we find our own divinity, what we worship, what we think is sacred. So wherever Neptune is in your chart is what you think is of beauty, sacredness, and inspiration. It's the area where you are seeking to touch God. It's also the area in your chart that you connect to God in through that Neptune. That's the channel. Neptune is the open mic, so to speak, up to the heavens going, yo, anybody up there? So this next week, as Neptune comes to join with Chiron, one of the things we're going to find is that we're moving to communicate with our wound in a different way. And we may also have some kind of inspiration or some new idea around what our wound is that helps us figure it out on a different level. Because Neptune joining with Chiron is going to help us get a little clearer and help us see it. And it doesn't happen this week. It happens next. But we know how those things build up, you know. And so we want to kind of get you, I want to get you a little ready that that's part of the thing you're going to be working on. The other thing is with Neptune, sorry, kitten. Got the kitten here on the desk, and he's, I had to move the papers because I can't see the aspects. So now he's like looking at me like, what are you moving stuff for? All right. The other thing that we're having this week is a lot of quiet. It's kind of a quiet week. We've got a couple of nice long void moons. We've got a void moon all day Tuesday afternoon. We got a void moon all Sunday morning. And we're entering a period where we're going to have more void moons. The moon's void right now. And when the moon is void, we're supposed to relax and recreate and kind of connect to things. So that's kind of an important thing to note. The other thing that's going to happen this week is Mercury, being a busy guy that he is, he joins up with the Sun, and he joins up with Venus. So he joins up with the Sun on the 4th, tomorrow, and he joins up with Venus on the 5th. Now, generally when Mercury, don't go biting my transits here, kitten. When Mercury joins up with a planet, he gives voice to it. He gives it a perspective, he gives it an idea, he gives it a vision. So Mercury joining with the Sun in Capricorn is what we call combust, and it gives the energy of the Sun. The Sun doesn't think it's wrong when Mercury's joined to it. So it kind of says, you know, this is what I want. This is my vision. This is where I'm going with this. So Mercury joined to the Sun is a very focused mind, and that we have tomorrow, January 4th. Kind of a focused energy, a focused mind. We're really pretty clear about what we want. And then on the 5th, or what our ego wants. And on the 5th, Mercury joins with Venus and says to Venus, gee, cool, where are we going with this? What's the plan? What's the party? What's next? And as he joins with Venus, Venus is at 13 of Capricorn. And so she is very much a focused energy and a desire energy. So Venus in Capricorn likes the good life, likes the good things, wants good stuff, is generally pretty crystal clear about what she considers to be of value to her and not. So Mercury joining with her on the 5th is going to give us a focus on what is of value to you. Or you're going to be asked to say what is of value to you on the 5th. Then Mercury on the 5th also talks to Jupiter in a semi-square. At 12 degrees of Capricorn to 12 degrees of, or to the 20s of Aquarius. So Capricorn is the structures we build that support us. Aquarius is the freedom from the structures, a new vision of the structures. And a semi-square from Mercury to Jupiter says, okay, so you've got these structures that support you. How do you want to change them? Because remember, Mercury's going backwards. He's going to come back over these again. So Jupiter needs to have a vision of what he wants to change and how he wants to change it. And he'll be asked for his vision on the 5th. Then Mercury continues to go backwards. And on the 6th, he talks to both Mars and to Uranus. Now, he talks to Mars and Uranus in a biquintile and a quintile. What quintiles are is their fifth harmonics. So that's like when you have a really brilliant idea, okay? And Mercury is in the mood to have a really brilliant idea about what you need to do and how you need to change things, Mars, and what you need to do and how you need, or how you need to take action, Mars, and how you need to change things, Uranus. Now, Mars is going backwards, so there's a revision process somehow involved in this change. But you're really going to have a great idea on the 6th. Then on the 7th, Mercury has a sextile to Pallas. Now, Pallas is in Scorpio right now. So she's the pattern seer. Pallas Athena is the father's daughter. She's the brilliant strategic. She's strategic, not statistician. Strategic. I don't know what that word would be. Strategic, whatever. She's smart. And she's strategic. There we go. And she knows what she wants. So Mercury's having a sextile with her. And he's in an opening sextile, meaning he's saying to her, oh, so what did you want again? And because remember, he's still going backwards. So he's going to come back over this place one more time. So Pallas Athena's going to tell them what she wants. Now, she's in the sign of Scorpio, so she's been noticing all the triangles. And she also happens to be on the midpoint. We haven't talked about midpoints yet, but she's on the midpoint of the North Node and the Jupiter, Neptune, and Chiron. So what she's doing is she's saying there is a purpose for this stuff, whatever it is. You have to understand the purpose. Even if you don't understand the purpose, trust the process. Go forward. Go forward, go forward. Get the revision, go forward. Because she's focusing on that. Then on the 8th, Mercury has the semi-square to Neptune. So that's going to be probably a rainy, foggy, cold transportation screwed up kind of day, because Mercury is travel and transportation and Neptune is the rain. And then also going to be maybe a little depressed. Hopefully not too bad, but, you know, kind of a little emotional or a little volatile or a little sad. And then on the 9th, Mercury has an aspect to Chiron and to Ceres. And what Chiron is it's an understanding that there's a wound, that we all have the wound, that wounding is part of our life, and how are we going to work with it. And then he has an aspect with Ceres that says that there is this process, and the aspect is a semi-sextile, so it comes from the blind spot where you kind of feel like you didn't really see it coming. So that's going to be on the 9th, that maybe you didn't really see, based on the emotions of the 8th, what was coming on the 9th. But being aware of it, that's part of the story. And then Mercury has a square to Juno on the 9th, which is back to the envy story from last week, when there was a lot of envy flying around in the world. And when Mercury squares Juno, Juno as the envious wife, as the envious person who says, gee, you seem to have that and I don't, I want what you have, or as the possessive energy of anything, because I think of Juno not only as a partnering energy, but she's possessive in the partnership. And Mercury square to her says, you can't possess anything. You know, when I was younger and just starting to study astrology, I had a friend who was going through a divorce, and she was spending a lot of times on the internet and reading the blogs, and somebody had posted that you have opportunities to cheat on your spouse. Her spouse had cheated on her. You have opportunities to cheat on your spouse every day. Millions of opportunities present themselves where you could take advantage of cheating on your spouse should you choose to do so, but you don't have to. And she was kind of blown away by that, because she'd never really thought about it, because that's not how she thinks, because she's a moon in Scorpio, and they don't cheat on their spouses generally. They kill their spouses when their spouses cheat on them, but they don't really cheat on their spouses. So Mercury square Juno is a question to you about what is your vision of partnership? What do you want partnership to look like? What's the energy underneath? Also this week, and again, it's a quiet week, so there's not a huge amount of stuff going on. Next week's much busier. We also have this week on the 4th, Venus is in a semi-square to Jupiter. Now, she's moving slower than Mercury. So she's waking up that, and she's also moving direct, so she's not going back and getting those other old planets. So she's saying to Jupiter, okay, let's expand, let's go forward. And then she has a quintile aspect to Mars on the 4th, asking what her vision is. Now, a couple weeks ago on the new moon in Sagittarius back in December, you were asked what your vision for your future was on some level. And now the universe is coming back and saying, remember when we asked you that question back in December? And that would have been around December 16th or so, 15th, 16th. Now that you're ready to really go forward, what do you actually want? And your job is to kind of say, oh, well, what I'd like is da-da-da-da. And then on the 8th, you're going to have to make some kind of adjustment between what you want and your vision of how you get there. And then you move forward towards it on the 9th of January. So that's kind of the theme for the week. Not a lot to cover. So we have a couple callers, which I'll pick up, and then we'll go forward, and then we'll have the astrology lesson on eclipses, at the back end. So how's that sound? I think that'll work. So we will now try and pick up the callers. And the call-in number is 347-215-7467. So again, the week is quiet, with the focus being on partnering and producing things, and also with the idea of Mercury having a lot of revelations and a lot of understanding and figuring out things, but basically easy. And he's also going backwards, which means he's going to come back across these planets one more time to really figure out what the structure should be. Right now he's in revise, revision, and collect the data mode. All right, so we'll see if I can get a person. Hi, 585, are you there?
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you, Anne?
I'm very good. What's the question?
Well, I've spoken to you before. This is Aeolia calling from Rochester. And
hi, Aeolia. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Good.
I have, you know, the Gang of Three still mm-hmm. sitting on my son and still getting activated. You know, I've got this, my stats are February 14th,
February 14, 19.
51.
51 or 61?
5-1.
5-1. Time?
9:06 a.m. Evergreen Park, Illinois.
Okay. Okay, so the Gang of Three is picking on you.
Oh, yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, this Mars retrograde is also talking to Pluto natally.
Mm-hmm. Well, your natal Pluto's at 18, so it's an inconjunct to natal Pluto. So it's not a clear energy, but it's definitely a communication of some sort.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this, the blue moon of New Year's Eve is pretty much on my midheaven nadir axis, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was. The eclipse when then was on your midheaven IC. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that just the work line up, bring up issues around work and career and what you're doing for work and stuff like that.
Oh, well, it did. I'm doing one-on-one elder care in an attempt to reinvent myself because there doesn't seem to be regular work for me. Mm-hmm. And I spent the week in a sometimes very uncomfortable situation out of state helping a family with their 80-year-old mom.
Okay.
None of whom I knew before I went. So I knew that there was potential there for there to be some uncomfortableness.
Right, right. So what's the question?
Well, the question for me is, you know, how to, you know, I'm looking for a good way to understand the Chiron in the mix here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The little part of what you started out talking about earlier this evening.
Right, where Chiron is. So Chiron for you is at zero cap in your chart, and Pluto's been on it over this last year and a half,
mm-hmm.
fall of 2000. Mm-hmm. So Chiron in Capricorn in the ninth house, Chiron in Capricorn in general, we look to Saturn, and Saturn for you is in the sixth house of work, and it's in the sign of Libra. So it's saying that there's a part of you that really wants to partner with work, and, you know, it squares your natal Saturn. So it says, well, we try and partner with work, and then what does that look like? We try and do this, and then how does that happen? And so that's certainly part of it. And then the other part is it's in the ninth house, so that there's a very strong series of beliefs that you have about what your work is or how you should work or what work looks like for you. And it also can indicate natally that there was some wounding around religious issues or ninth house issues, foreigners or belief systems, that when you were younger, the belief systems, you were told that this was the proper belief system for you. And as an Aquarian child, you would say, I don't know that I really believe that. but you have a very strong spiritual sense with the ruler of your chart being in the 12th, so it would be partly you finding your own set of religion and finding your own vision of religion. And now that the Chiron in general is in your 9th house, in your 11th house, joining Neptune's joining to Chiron, what we're looking at is how do we get that vision of where you're going forward, and what does that look like? And so part of your job is to say, okay, what is my vision for myself? And you're also having Neptune on your sun right now, so that's also not necessarily a real clear vision of where you're going and what you're doing. And you're not supposed to have one. You're just kind of supposed to trust the process. Neptune transits are very hard. People always go, oh, Neptune transit, great, you're going to fall in love and have a wonderful time. And that's true. They can have that quality to them, but they can also be very disillusioning, because part of what happens is you have this dream and you go, well, this is my dream, and you kind of can lose touch with whatever reality is, or you can say, well, my reality is this and I want to move forward in this direction, and Neptune can make it a little hard to get your feet on the ground and to have you feel like you're doing it. So you said you worked with someone who was out of state, more than 500 miles probably from Rochester.
We were down in Naples, Florida for the week.
Right. Well, that's Chiron in the 9th. Okay. So Chiron in the 9th is traveling more than 500 miles to meet your Chiron and working with an elderly person. Your work, Chiron squares your Saturn in the 6th. So you went more than 500 miles to do your work. And in that process, there was some kind of revelation around what your work is. Do you like it? Are you happy with it? And you aren't really going to find your true work for a little bit longer, because Saturn right now is in your 6th house, and he's going to go back over your Saturn again. He's going to station in a couple of weeks, and then he's going to go back to your progressed Saturn, 27 Virgo. So you've got still some stuff to go until you actually find a work situation that really feels like home. It's part
like,
of your...
Like next year, like 5 years?
Like July.
Okay.
Because Saturn finishes with your Saturn return in July. That's when you're done with it. And once you're finished with it, then you're going to be able to say, okay, I've now worked 30 years. I'm wrapping up a 30-year work cycle. Now I'm ready for another one. Because Saturn for you is a career indicator, because he rules your midheaven.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also a 6th house. He's in your daily activities. So as he finishes as you have your Saturn return, your second Saturn return, that should find you some work that really feels much more like your real work. And that he doesn't get back to, he's gotten to one this fall. He got there in October, November, end of October, beginning of November. And then he goes back down to that number. But he goes back through all the late Virgo planets, April, May, June.
Yeah.
And then he comes out of there and he hits Saturn one more time. And he also squares your Chiron. So certainly some of your work can be working with people that have, come some kind of speech impediment or some kind of mental lack of cognitive functioning, because Chiron's in the 9th house, which is the 3rd house of other people's minds. But it's but I would say it's July. And you also have Neptune on your sun. So there's a part of you that's not really knowing where you're going right now. And while that's really frustrating, once Venus changes signs, your progressed Venus changes signs, that should help a bit with the money too. Because she's sitting at the very last degree of Taurus. So the money really starts to pick up, in the next year or so. Because she's at the last degree of Taurus, so she's making you very aware of, whenever Venus is in the last degree of any sign, or any planet's in the last degree of a sign, it gives us a sense that, it's the kind of really wanting to possess it and own it. And she changes signs into Gemini in November. But she's in your second house, so you're very aware of what your value is, or how you're not valued, or how people value, or what you think your value is, and what they're actually saying, well, this is what your really value is. But once she gets into Gemini, she's trining your Saturn, and then she's moving forward, and then Saturn is in, he's in your 6th house, gets off your part of fortune, which should ease up the finances too.
Oh, Saturn sitting on part of Fortune as well?
On your progressed part of Fortune, yeah.
And this is progressed Venus that you've been speaking about.
Yeah, progressed Venus is the ruler of your second house, because the question is about money, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the questions.
Yeah, I think it's, Saturn, the question of work in terms of right livelihood. You know, your chart wants to make a physical, solid contribution because your sixth house, your second house, and your tenth house are all in Capricorn. And so the energy of wanting to contribute and wanting to be part of something is very strong. And so, but right now with Saturn on your Saturn, it's almost a little alienated. Your workplace is alienated. Or the people that you work with are Saturn. You know, they have chronic issues or some kind of health stuff.
Yeah, they're exceedingly old, and yet there is a huge part of me that is able to value them and meet them where they are, mm-hmm. and value them for who they are, no matter what they aren't anymore. You know.
Right. You see them for what they were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, you know, there's something enormous to be said for that. But this is a year where you really just kind of have to follow the energy because Neptune's on your sun and Uranus and Jupiter are coming to your progressed Jupiter, and they're also all over your 12th house planets. So you're going to do a lot of work with institutions and hospitals or behind the scene. You're not necessarily going to be seen that much, but it's spiritual work, so it's connect to their souls and work with them in that capacity, because that's the best. And then once Saturn gets out of your sixth, or off your Saturn, you're going to feel like a whole lot better.
And are there any really strong indicators in the progress chart or that of big movement? You know, physically relocating somewhere else.
Your progressed descendant's coming to natal Uranus, but that's in a year. That's a ways away. And your progressed moon, as the rules the fourth, is in Leo. It's in the fourth house right now, so it's not really wanting to move. You're not having huge indicators for moving. You do have Saturn trining your natal moon as the ruler of your fourth. I don't see enormous ones. And let me see where your solar arc moon is.
Yeah. It's tough to know. I mean, I understand with Neptune on my sun that it's kind of, you know, roll with the energy. And in some ways, that's just an intensification of all that 12th house stuff I've been dealing with all my life, you know?
Yeah. I would, do any kind of chanting or anything like this? When you're having these kind of transits, sometimes it's good to do transit, do mantras to Saturn or mantras to...
I do, actually. I'm involved in a spiritual practice that pulls in chants from many different spiritual traditions, and I also am real aware the Hindus have a 40-day practice, possibilities. You choose the mantra and you work with it for 40 days.
Right.
Yeah.
And I would do Ganesh too, because you've got those planets in the 12th house, so they are kind of, work comes, you do find things. You may not necessarily like it, but you do have Jupiter, Venus, and Mars in the 12th, so very often some kind of hidden angel or some kind of hidden energy appears and kind of takes care of you. It may not be what you want with the sun in Aquarius, and the Aries rising, but there is stuff that shows up. So I would say, I'm a big one on, mantras or rosaries or just kind of focused intention. Next year you have very good aspects to move because your progressed descendant's coming to Uranus in the third and your moon is changing signs out of the fourth house. So I would say...
Like the second half of 2010, or are you talking next year, 2011?
2011, yeah.
Oh.
7 and 4 months from now. So that's I guess it would be the end of this year.
Yeah.
Because when the progressed moon gets out of the fourth house, very often we move. There's an opportunity to move, and at that point Uranus will be on your sun will be on your Uranus, so you'll be ready to go. But I think I think the Neptune on the sun is really a, you know, a connecting on a spiritual point to something. And with Jupiter is also in your 12th house, so that's kind of a behind-the-scenes kind of energy anyway. And then next year, Jupiter's in your first, so that gets you much more out in the world and much more seen. But you're having a Jupiter return this year, too, which is also about kind of starting a whole new 12-year cycle around your spiritual practice and around your work. So
right.
Pretty decent-sized. So, but the Chiron itself is, you know, getting the square from Saturn. And you natally it has it anyway. So that's also, it was triggered on the eclipses. And so the work took you out of your home into a faraway place to go take care of people.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And you do have that orientation anyway with all those planets. You know, you work for the collective with 10, 11, and 12 with the emphasis you have.
Yeah, and I always have, but the institutions got to be very stifling and very parental in a negative way. Mm-hmm. And so to be doing this on my own now without a parental institution over me has some very freeing aspects, some sensibility about it, you know. But it also has some drawbacks, things like health insurance and, you know.
Yeah.
Or lack thereof.
Lack thereof, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the hard one. And, there, you know, in New York State's budget, I don't know when it'll be very soon. I don't know. I think it's a big year for you, but it's like a year you're not going to know what's going on until it's finished. Because with Neptune and the Sun, you know, it often changes the structure of things, but we don't necessarily know what the process of that change is going to be until it finishes. You know,
yeah.
On the other side of it, we go, oh, that's what it was for. But while we're in it, we don't necessarily catch it. So,
When is Neptune officially finished? Beating me up. I mean, off my son.
It'll be a while. He's on it all this year, next year. Yeah. That's
next
why I'm
year
saying.
Too.
Yeah, you know, the whole idea of music and dance and beauty and chanting and, you know, really bucking up your spiritual practice, you know, and kind of incorporating it or being in spiritual groups, being in groups because Neptune's in the house of the collective or in the house of groups, you know, finding a group that, you know, shares a spiritual practice with you could be very helpful to use it. And also when you have that much Neptune, you know, you have to really immerse yourself in Neptune. So you want positive Neptune, not drugs and alcohol, but music and dance and singing and chanting.
Interestingly enough, all those pieces, all those parts of my life right now are much less active and much less comforting and much less comfortable than it has
so
been for years.
You've used them in other years, other times? Okay. Well, what happens then, if you've done those forms of Neptune, then you need to find new forms? Because what happens is sometimes when you're having a big Neptune transit, the old things that used to comfort you don't anymore.
Right.
And your job is to just determine and find new Neptune. It's almost like it gets turned off. And when it gets turned off, then we're in a... The old stuff doesn't work, so you have to find new Neptune. So Liz Green has a great book on it, and she lists a bunch of different Neptune things.
Liz Green?
Yeah,
did you
Liz
say?
Green's book on Neptune, yeah. But, yeah, sometimes that happens when you're having when you've done those things as your those been your solace. I had one friend when she was having a big Neptune transit. She used to go to movies, and she just couldn't go to movies anymore. It was just done for her. You know, and that was where she went for solace, and she was a therapist, so it was very comforting for her to sit in a dark room and be able to be emotional, private, but in a group environment. And it went away. It came back when she was finished with the Neptune transit. You know, the movies is comfort, but she had to explore new Neptune. So she took up learning a foreign language because her Neptune was in the ninth. She took up doing Neptune things. She started playing the harp. You know, you can do other stuff that triggers it and makes it a little happy, and that will help a lot. Okay.
So natal Neptune in the fifth is kids and
creativity and things that you do that you love. You know, painting, watering, any kind of fifth house activities, all creativity, children, love affairs, passion, music, any kind of art, artistic stuff where you're actually making the art rather than and make it be a fluid or water-based art. You know, maybe put on music while you're doing it. So
yeah,
so cool. So keep me posted.
Very good. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Good luck with it. Okay. Hello, 212. Did I get you?
Yes, you did.
Hi, how are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm very good. What's
wonderful.
New and exciting?
Well, lots of exciting things, but what I would like to ask, I have a couple of questions about possibly leaving New York and leaving my painting studio to move it inside my home, but what I most want to ask is, what do I have to look at this year that allows me to bring in my beloved and live as a loving couple?
Oh, okay. What's your birthday?
12/2/42, 6:30 a.m.
12/2/1942, and what's the time? 6?
6:30
a.m. 3:00 a.m. Where?
Boston.
B-O-S-T-O-N. Not Bostob. Got the cat sitting here right in front of my keyboard, so it's very type over his head. All right, December 2, 42, 6:30 in the morning, Boston. So the question is bringing in the beloved.
Right.
Okay, you've got Saturn and Uranus in the seventh. So for you, relationships often have a kick-up kind of quality to them. They get going, and then they kind of zip off. Plus, you're a Sag sun, so there's a whole freedom. Now, once we hit our 40s, Sages like to settle down, or they're actually more in the mood to settle down. What partner are you on now? Which house am I looking at? By partner, married, sharing assets, or just plain sharing assets, where, because you might not marry them, but you might live with them and share assets.
Living would be fine. Mm-hmm. I don't need to marry somebody right now.
Right. But sharing resource, which partner are you on?
Oh, wait. Ask me that question again.
So you're Saturn Uranus in the seventh, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have a very strong partner emphasis. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9,
really?
10, 11, 12 partners possible. You don't have to have that many, but you can have up to 12 with your chart.
Mm-hmm.
And which one are you on? You know, like been married twice?
Oh, I've been married twice.
And have you lived with anybody? Sharing resources?
Other than my husband's, no.
Okay, cool. All right, so then we're on the third partner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the seventh house is the first partner, so that was the crazy one that was a little bit like your father, or there was some kind of age difference with them.
Right.
And you married them, and then it was kind of suddenly over in a boom.
Right.
And then the second one was the control person, because he's the Pluto partner, he's the ninth house partner. And controlling looked like a real good family thing and, you know, was good when it started perhaps, but then it got a little wild and crazy. Third partner is the 11th house, which actually is lovely because the 11th house is ruled by Venus, and it's in your first house, Venus and Sag, and it's joined to Mercury. So this one's probably going to be a little younger than you, and this is the one that's truly the love of your life, and it's 13 Sag. So we want to see when that is getting triggered. Did you pull anybody in last year?
No.
When you were having that aspect?
No.
Okay. When Venus was kicked up. All right. Because you were having Saturn square that Venus for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So Pluto's in there now. Saturn's coming in that house in February. And then he gets out of it, and then he goes back into it in the fall. So I think in the fall time frame, we're looking at really pulling somebody in. Because he's sitting on the edge saying you're ready to bring in partner, but not quite yet. Progressed moon says 6 months. Venus says progressed moon, 6 months, 10 months. So that's October. Progressed moon says the other moon, solar arc moon, is, what's he doing? Aspecting your Neptune. Okay, so you're ready, but they're not around yet. And I would say 8 months from now, 6 to 8 months from now, 10 months from now, they're in. You don't really have to do anything. Probably through groups, you're going to meet them through other friends. You can possibly meet them on a trip or traveling, because the ruler of the ninth house the eighth house for them is Venus, and it's Venus and Sag, or you can meet them through your through their children or through their mother. So if you meet someone who or their sibling who says to you, oh, my brother's really cute, you know, how about if I fix you up? Say yes.
Okay.
You know, talk to your friends and say, fix me up. I'm ready to date. Get me out there. And this one actually looks like the keeper. This is the one you've been waiting for all your life.
Really?
Yeah. Well, the first, you know, your Venus is joined to Juno, and she doesn't get activated until the third marriage.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great.
Yeah. So
is this a marriage, or is this just, or is this a?
It's Sagittarian, so it can be like we hang out together, but we don't necessarily merge our assets.
Right.
But they're going to be a little traditional, so they may want to marry you. You may not want to marry them, but that's, you know, that's the Sagittarian feeling anyway. But, the, you know, the last one was a real bad news guy. So that one we want to kind of say, you don't have to do that again. And whatever the lessons were you learned from the ninth, the second spouse, you want to kind of just say, okay, I figured those lessons out. Now I'm really, I know what I really want. And I would mm-hmm. do part a little bit of a review of what you learned about from that partner so that you're clear about what you're looking for. And then the eclipses that we have, the eclipses are on your Mercury. So there's an eclipse on your Mercury, your progressed Mercury, on the 15th. So I would sit down on the new moon and just kind of sit and say, you know, I'm the new moon on the 15th, say, okay, I'm ready for a partner, and I'd like it to be, you know, and Mercury's joined your Venus
mm-hmm.
natally. So that's a good moon to sit down and do a, you know, my vision for what I'm looking for is. But first go through and review the other partners, what you liked about those relationships, and then also what you didn't like, and then write the positive version of what you liked.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. You know, I didn't like that they did this, this, mm-hmm. and this, so write the positive version on the form. But Mars is through the ninth. You've got some releasing stuff to do with that second partner that you haven't finished yet. So that's your job between now and May.
That's interesting because he was really quite a great guy.
Mm-hmm.
This wasn't a horrific marriage.
Okay, why did it end, Death?
I chose to leave. I wasn't in love with him.
Okay, but he wasn't he controlling?
No.
No, okay.
No.
All right. Because it's Pluto in the ninth, so usually that one is retrograde.
I guess passive aggressiveness is controlling, so I guess I have to come back to you and say yes, there was. But I always think of controlling as somebody who's really, you know,
overtly
pushes you around.
Yeah, no. This guy
yeah.
had like big mother stuff, and he controlled you.
Oh,
with
absolutely,
money.
Yeah.
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 I mean, I look at Pluto and I go, oh, controlling.
Yeah.
You know, but it's retrograde, so it's controlling in a subtle way.
Exactly.
And it's
right.
controlling to get what he wants,
right.
which you've been doing the work on it with Saturn squaring that moon, but. There's something in there. Yeah, you left, but you didn't really leave. There's
exactly.
some part of you that's still holding on to him. So what I would say is, with Mars is retrograde in his house.
Mm-hmm.
So the issue's up with him between now and March when it goes direct, and then it's in that house through the end of June. So you want to kind of really give yourself an opportunity to. You know, kind of go through and maybe mull on, you know, how
right.
that passive-aggressive stuff works well with you.
Yeah, I got that.
Because that's really the only – your Virgo moon gets guilty.
Mm-hmm.
And they can guilt you into doing stuff rather than you doing it freely of your own will. And being, you know, a 42 baby and a Sag, you're kind of a wild woman from the point of view of your family in terms of – you know, Sages are kind of our little conquer people.
Mm-hmm.
So that Virgo moon was also criticized and told to be a good girl. And he
yeah.
did something with the good girl part of you that I would like you to pull out so that you're ready for the partner that shows up, because that partner is going to want the Sag girl.
And I like being the Sag girl.
I know. But we want to let the Virgo part
right.
have a freedom and have her, you know, have her be honored in her vestal virgin state.
That's a good positioning, right?
Yes. Yeah, because they were the sacred prostitutes, and they had great sex. So we liked that
yeah,
part, too.
Liked that part, right.
Yeah, and he kind of squashed that part of you
yeah.
somehow.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Yeah, so I say in the fall, you're good to go.
Great. Question. I'm
yep.
an artist.
Yep.
And I might
The little Brit, you can't, I guess you guys can't. I've always wondered if you guys could hear the little British lady. She's saying I got 60 seconds, so we're down the countdown
okay.
now.
Should I leave my studio and move into my apartment, or should I just... that money is going to continue to come flow.
Money should be fine this year. You've got a new thing. You've got Jupiter coming to your fourth house, so you mm-hmm. may find another space that you can live in with Jupiter mm-hmm. to the fourth, and it gets there pretty quick this year because he's in and out of the fourth. So you may – he gets into the fourth in March. So you can definitely have some shift in home environment in that time frame. He's fast moving this year, so he's uh-huh. down in your fourth house cusp, and he goes in there the end February 8th. Watch to see who you meet uh-huh. around February 8th, 9th, who you meet around some kind of space to work in, because that could be a time frame for finding it.
Interesting. You mean my personal space or my artist
space? Artist space. Mm-hmm.
My artist space.
Creative space, yeah.
Okay.
It's Jupiter space, so it's creative.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
Okay, babe. Thanks.
All right, well, I screwed up. I set the timer to take the calls, and then, of course, I ignored the timer, and the show's over. So next week we'll talk about eclipses, and we'll add the lesson part in. You know, I was trying to do it on a void moon. You're not supposed to start stuff on a void moon, not that that's any excuse. So forward we go. Have a great week. Remember, Monday, Tuesday, good for separating from things. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Great, great closing aspects, very supportive, and it's a good time to follow your dream. Take care, and this is Ann Ortley signing off. Have a great week, and I'm going to go pet my kitten who's lying here all across my bright red desk. Take care. Bye-bye.